DW Africa Link.
Sexual harassment and abuse in Ghana's schools are pervasive, underreported, and often met with weak sanctions. But the current public outcry and 16 days of activism against gender-based violence are opening a window for real reform.
Most cases are reported, but then the authorities do not do anything.
Perpetrators are able to go scot-free. Some cases are handled just any way, anyhow, and then people continue to do these things.
So what laws and reporting mechanisms are needed to protect women and girls? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Ghana is grappling with a troubling rise in sexual harassment and assault cases, especially in senior high schools. UNICEF's Ghana study reports that more than 50% of female senior high school students have experienced sexual assault. That is one of the highest known school-based harassment rates in West Africa. Perpetrators range widely: teachers, classmates, step-parents, relatives, and trusted acquaintances. This raises urgent questions about systemic abuse, institutional failures, and weak accountability mechanisms. Let's get more insights from Becky Enyunam Ahaji, a lawyer and gender expert. I also have Ajua Tenkroma Domina, DW correspondent in Accra, Ghana. Welcome, ladies, to Africa Link. Becky, let's start with some education here. In the spirit of marking 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, can you help us understand the difference between sexual violence, sexual harassment, and sexual assault?
All right, Eddie, thanks for the question. So to answer your question, sexual harassment, sexual violence, sexual abuse, it all depends. They are the same. It's a yes and no. So yes, in the sense that when we talk about sexual harassment, if you look at the Ghanaian context, the only law you see it defined in is in our Labor Act. And it defines sexual harassment as any unwelcome, offensive sexual advances or requests that have been made by an employer or a co-worker or a superior officer to someone else, right? So the thing is, it's unwelcome, it's offensive, and it's just unfortunate. But then a sexual harassment can be a sexual abuse in the sense that if you make an unwelcome advance, maybe you touch me inappropriately, then you've moved beyond just making an unwelcome advance to now, if you physically touch me inappropriately, you attempt to rape me, then that can become a sexual abuse, which can also become a criminal offense if you look at it. So basically, usually you see us use sexual harassment because it kind of covers whether it is a civil thing, whether it is not a criminal offense or something that can be a crime or something can physically violate someone. It covers it all. But the crux of it is that if it is a sexual advancement or it's a physical abuse, if we can look at it as a criminal offense or you can look at it as a civil offense, then whatever remedy you seek to go through would depend on that, on what the circumstances are. So it's a case-by-case basis, I'll say. But then generally, all of it come under gender-based violence, because then you can see that this abuse or this violation is being meted out because of my sex, because I'm a woman or because I'm a man, you are doing this to me. Then that all comes under the umbrella of gender-based violence. But as to whether it is an abuse or it's a harassment, the courts would determine on the case-by-case basis. And also, the severity of it would determine whether it can be couched as a criminal offense or it can be couched as a civil one. Yeah.
And I think the moral of all of this is that this all falls under the umbrella of gender-based violence, which is what we have to fight, or we have to keep fighting. And so thanks a lot for that. Now, focusing on the situation in Ghana, because, you know, you deal with such cases, is there really a trend that sexual harassment in Ghana is on the rise? What is the current state?
Oh, there's a trend. And I'm sure you've even heard in the news where some of, thanks to our digital age, a lot of it is now out in the open for people to hear and see. Unfortunately, we live in a society where if you are in a society where people see women as sex objects, or people do see women as second class citizens, if I should use it that way, there's a sort of entitlement to the bodies of women. And that's where that becomes the undertone for all of these sexual harassment cases and abuse. And then the power play as well. If you have a lot more men in decision making than women, then obviously you see that power play where they try to feel entitled to the women just so that they can give them an edge up or whatever. In Ghana, if you look at our legal landscape, I'll say that because the term sexual harassment is only defined in our Labor Act, sometimes you see a lot of the focus being on sexual harassment in the offices or in the workplace, right? And then you have institutions where now, because it is not comprehensive enough in our Labor Act, you have maybe for the educational sector, you would have the institutions themselves coming up with anti-sexual harassment guidelines on how they will deal with sexual harassment if it should come up in their institutions. And so that's the current framework we have. Internationally, you have the ILO Convention 190, which enjoins states to actually come up with comprehensive laws to deal with sexual harassment. Currently, Ghana has not ratified it, so we don't have like a legal framework or one specific law where you go to which deals with sexual harassment, whether that's at the workplace, or it's in schools, religious settings, wherever. We don't have that. So currently, what we do have is you have our criminal code where, like I talked about earlier, if it's an attempted rape or it's defilement or sexual assault, something that is defined in our criminal code, then you see that a criminal law will deal with it. But we don't have a comprehensive legal framework. And because we don't have that comprehensive legal framework, it seems as though if you want to deal with it, what does the institution have in place to deal with it? And that's where the problem is coming from. Because let's say, for example, if University of Ghana has a guideline, they have the systems, there's no overarching law to actually check the system they have in place to deal with sexual harassment. Is it confidential? Is it safe? Is it effective? Is it actually being implemented? There's no system to check that. And so sexual harassment is on the rise. You have people being unable to report, people being afraid to report, and then also people hiding it, because living in a society where people go, sometimes you can't even go to report to the police to tell you, oh, just, you know, wear a fearsome, deal with it, so handle it, don't let anybody hear. And so that's the unfortunate reality, because we don't have a national legal framework dealing with it in entirety, and you just have bits and pieces and bits of it in different laws.
We are saying that in Ghana's law, there is clear statement on sexual harassment, and you clearly defined it quite well. But then the schools also have the way they look at it.
Usually you have to go through internal mechanisms before you seek redress elsewhere. So if a student goes through the internal mechanism of the school and you are not satisfied, of course, you can go to the National Labor Commission, you can go to courts. That's not a problem. Because this is strictly for the labor law, like an employer. The student is not necessarily like an employee or a co-worker. If you look at the law critically, the student is not an employee or a co-worker. What usually happens, if the student reports, then the lecturer is brought before his employers, the school. And then the same school, you know, they are colleague lecturers. And then they now have to hear the evidence of the student, hear the evidence of the lecturer, and all of that. And I'm saying this because I've spoken to some students, and even though the schools may say, oh, this is confidential and anonymous and all of that, some of them don't feel safe because they feel it's like you're reporting the lecturer to his colleague lecturers. That's one of the reasons some of them give for not even speaking up in the first place.
Right. That's very educative. And Adjoa, I believe, you know, you're also learning a lot from this. You know, the reason we're even talking about sexual harassment now is because there's genuine conversations around it in Ghana. Why is that, Adjoa?
Eddie, so there's genuine conversation because a lot has been happening, especially in the education sector. So I think that now can be attributed really to the recent wave of cases in parts of the country. We've had cases from educational institutions in the past 1 year as well. We've even heard the Medical Association even come out to say that there's work, workplace harassment going on in the medical or the health sector. We've had in general workplaces and in homes as well. So let me break it down. For the education sector, in the past 1 month, we've had reported cases. So there was one in Okajakrom Senior High School, which may not be very familiar to the people who are listening, but in the Oti region and one also in the Ashanti region, there have been at least 6 cases, looking at the various news reports that we have documented so far. In one of the cases, and this is why the public are, you know, very concerned about this. In one of the cases, the president of the Ghana National Association of Teachers, NATS, made a comment which has incensed a lot of people and has brought this issue up. And he said that teachers who may have desires to pursue female students should channel that desire towards the female teachers instead, because there are a lot of, you know, female teachers who are beautiful, who are single, who can take these advances and not the students.
As if that makes it right.
Exactly, exactly. At the time, his justification was that he was trying to respond to the inappropriateness of the conduct between teachers and students, because that clearly, you know, talks about the power play. But when it comes to colleagues, then you're at an equal level and the females can either say yes or no. But the comment incensed a lot of people, and even the education minister came out to condemn that comment. For the health sector, we have had, like I mentioned earlier, the Ghana Medical Association, for instance, reviewed that sexual harassment cases have been reported by patients against health workers. And also, we can also talk about the professional setting. Recently, the education minister was at a program in June. He spoke about a disturbing prevalence of sexual and emotional harassment targeting young women in various professional settings. So there have been a chronicle of events in the country that, you know, points to the fact that this is a growing problem. A lot of things have been happening, and so people are talking about it. People are, you know, asking questions why it appears as if the country is going downward spiral when it comes to sexual harassment, and there's no clear commitment towards, you know, reducing these incidents. Every day you hear authorities come and condemn, but the action towards, you know, reducing them, we are not really seeing.
Right, that's a fair point. I was going to ask you if there's enough being done to deal with the situation, but as you say, many feel that there could be much more done. I believe, Becky, that one of the main challenges, as some people put it at least, is how you prove sexual harassment. And I know it's a very tricky question, because the point of the asking is not to make it even more difficult for women to come out and say, hey, I've been sexually harassed. I just want us to understand where there seems to be the complexity that is being generated among people. Or is it even that complex, or is it pretty straightforward?
Complex or straightforward? I'll say it's both. The challenge is, court is about testimony and evidence, Eddie. And that's the thing. And not just maybe the courtroom, but even let's say you were going through an internal mechanism in your institution, if it's going to be before a committee of inquiry or whatever, it's about evidence and testimony. And that's where the challenge is, because usually we all know, especially with sexual harassment cases, sometimes they happen in the private. Sometimes you didn't even have time to record or to have a witness or all of that. And so that's where the challenge is. And more importantly, too, like I said earlier, it also depends on the severity of it. If it happens to be, let's say, an attempted rape, which is a criminal offense, the threshold is that it has to be beyond all reasonable doubt that this happened, back to evidence. And even if it's a civil remedy you're seeking for, so maybe you were unfairly terminated by your employer, you want to prove that you reported sexual harassment and it wasn't dealt with. Even if it's that, it has to be a balance of probabilities where you're saying that this is more probable that this happened than it didn't happen. So it all comes back to evidence.
Isn't that a challenge, that you somehow have to prove sexual harassment beyond any reasonable doubt with evidence?
So let me just give an example. Maybe that will help. So let's say it's attempted rape or it's rape, right? And let's say at the moment it happened, you couldn't go to the hospital to get a medical examination and get a medical report, which is what usually happens, because the victims are usually in shock. They are afraid. Sometimes they are even shy to tell anybody. And so they don't get that immediate medical attention where it can even, you know, serve as evidence. Sometimes, so they don't tell anyone. Let's say if at the moment it happened, you sent a text to a friend or you told someone, you know, you could keep like an electronic trail or evidence of what happened. That doesn't happen. And sometimes it's like years after, right? But then, or maybe you don't speak to anyone about it. And also some are also afraid to report because there's usually a power imbalance with these things. Usually the perpetrator is someone who is an authority or someone who is higher up or someone who has an advantage over you. And so, or maybe you have a house help who's living with someone. Obviously, let's say the perpetrator was the man in the house, the one who's taking care of it. It's difficult to report. So that is the challenge. But then in Ghana, what we're trying to do around that is that we are looking at, we have what we call gender-based violence courts, okay, which are like specialized courts in Ghana, where we have trained not just the judge, but you've trained how do you call those who work in the judicial service there. We work with specialized people and the police who are prosecutors and all of that, so that they understand the intricacies of when it comes to gender-based violence, where even if you cannot get the evidence, let's say if it was a murder case or something where the standard is high, we understand the intricacies of, okay, even if it's a week after, can we still get a medical report to prove that there was this? So we are trying to come up with a system where you don't necessarily have to go the beyond reasonable doubt, but we are putting systems in place where people feel safe to be able to report or to be able to gather the evidence we need to actually prosecute. So that's where we are heading towards now. But to answer your question, I would say that evidence is critical because you also know about the Me Too movement, right? Where sometimes people also accuse people and it turned out not to be true. So you don't want a situation where just because somebody cried foul, you go ahead and prosecute someone. We still need evidence just so that you know that justice has been served. And so that's the challenge we have.
Right. Thank you very much, Becky, for that. And Adjoa, you've been speaking to a lot of women on the ground, or you've been speaking to people on the ground about this particular topic. How do they really feel about the steps being made to make sure that their voices are being heard, especially the ladies that are normally at the receiving end of gender-based violence?
Eddie, to be honest, many feel the steps are not enough. One of the women who agreed to speak to me spoke about how sometimes you report these incidents and even the way they are handled, they make you feel like you brought it upon yourself. And so the Ghanaian society in general is slightly wired towards blaming the victim more than accepting that this could have happened in the first place. So it makes people shudder or makes people withdraw when it comes to coming out to, you know, talk about the abuses or the harassment that have gone against them. Civil society has also been very, very persistent in calling for a deeper reflection. So, for instance, the societal failures that I talk about, there's a concern that usually when the abuses happen between people, maybe a teacher or a student, would usually hear things like, what did you go and do? When the teacher called you, could you not have said no? Could you not have said, you know, something that suggests that the victim could have done something more than they did? And so really people feel let down by the system, feel that the system is not doing enough to protect them. So the calls have been that we need to really build stronger institutions, you know, stronger accountability system, where we know that once this happens and you go through the proper channels in reporting, provide the evidence that you have, you know, that to support your claim, steps are taken and people are held accountable for the things that they do. Eddie.
Right. Thank you very much, Adjoa. Let's talk about money here. And you're wondering, money? What has money got to do with this? Well, in most cases, it probably has everything to do with it. How expensive is it, Becky, for the ordinary person to use legal services to address sexual harassment cases?
Yeah, money has everything to do with it, Eddie. It's, I would say the court process itself is not expensive, but maybe it is affording a lawyer or affording transportation, affording the medical reports, affording, even if you need a psych eval, affording even the time off work to go to court or to go before these committees of inquiry. That is the challenge.
So how do we go around this?
Yes, so the first thing I'll say is that we should make, so we have Legal Aid Commission, which are lawyers who are supposed to provide free services. I am thinking that we should make it mandatory for them to take up all these sexual harassment cases for free so that people are not now going to look for lawyers or try and get pro bono. The second thing I'll say is that if we can add it to the National Health Insurance Scheme where it is free, if let's say you've experienced sexual harassment or abuse and you need a medical examination or report, if we can add that to our National Health Insurance Scheme so that people don't know, think that they have to pay for it to even get the report, that will help. The third thing is in terms of, I've noticed that with most victims or the complainant, you see them not showing up in court because they cannot even afford transportation to come to court and all of that. Beyond the legal services that the Legal Aid Commission would give, I'm even going to think, I don't know whether it's social welfare or what institutional mechanism to put in place that can ensure that they can even be transported to court and back, right? And even beyond that, some of them don't even want to come and face the abusers in court. Can we have specialized witness rooms where they don't have to encounter their victims? These are some of the things we need to start looking at in terms of strengthening our institutions. The fourth thing I would also say is that when it comes to gathering evidence and all, we need to start sensitizing victims. So even let's say I go to DOFSO and I report, can there be like guidelines to tell me that you need this, you need this, you need this, so that you can readily provide the evidence that is needed, right? But sometimes people go and like address it. Sometimes it's the police that will even turn you off, right? Or people should, but can we have, if it's just not just the guidelines, which are flyers, but easily accessible information for me to know that, okay, this is how long the process will take. This is what I need as evidence. This is what will be required of me. I'll need to come and testify, blah, blah, blah. If it's able to break down the information for people, I think that will help. So it's not so much about the money, but for me, it's more about having a working system so that people can easily access justice. That's where the real challenge is. Yeah.
Right. Thank you very much, Becky, for those strong last words. Adjoa, you have the final say in wrapping this up. Are you optimistic that Ghana, in this case, is heading in the right direction?
I am cautiously optimistic because, Eddie, we've had these conversations before. The issue is that we wait for the problems to happen before we take action. So usually knee-jerk reactions, we suspend the people, we carry out investigations, and maybe in the worst-case scenario, we sack them from the education institutions. But what I'm optimistic about is that the education minister has given the Ghana Education Service, for instance, the go-ahead to take any measure that they deem appropriate, you know, in dealing with some of these issues. So it will not wait, you know, for a whole lot of stakeholders to come in before the education service can take action.
Thank you very much, Adjoa. For all those listening to this particular podcast, at the end of the day, think again about your actions and think about, would I want this to be done to me or my daughter or my mother or my sister, right? And I think sometimes just thinking that way helps change the way you want to act. Next time, just have a second thought before making any move. And this has to end. Becky Enyonam Ahaji, lawyer and gender expert. Also, Adjoa Tenkroma Domina, DW correspondent in Accra, Ghana. Thank you very much for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
The consequences of sexual harassment are heavy. Mental health, trauma, pregnancy, school dropouts, shame, and cycles of silence. Ghana has laws that define indecent assault and set a minimum sentence of 6 months. But the reality is that many cases never reach court.
Most cases are reported, but then the authorities do not do anything to punish those perpetrators. So the law has to take its own course so that given a reported case, even irrespective of the status of the perpetrator, whether he be the head or any of the teachers board, they should find a way to punish the perpetrator so that those things can be getting rid of, because it's very shameful.
Well, this has been an issue of concern for many of us, and I think with its recent rise, it's become a worry. Perpetrators are able to go scot-free. I think that it's really a bad habit, and that people who are found guilty of such should be punished publicly.
This year, many activists say the classroom needs to be at the center of the fight against sexual harassment. Global evidence suggests that combining safe reporting channels, peer clubs, teacher training, community engagement, and clear sanctions can significantly reduce violence and harassment if properly funded and monitored. This highlights the power of community action, inspiring people to believe in collective change. What do you think? Please share your thoughts with us on Facebook at DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW, made for minds.